The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love, Deborah Voith, and Lenora Brightmoon. Three out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each episode, they will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's show. This is Deborah Voith, and I am here with Elvira.
Hello.
And we are so pumped and looking forward to the topic of today's show, which is the witch in movies. So come on in to our magical space as we dive into some of our favorite movies, examining the witch trope and the evolution of the witch in cinema from the 1920s to the 2020s. So grab a drink, maybe some popcorn, and sit with us a spell.
Yay! I would like popcorn, but I couldn't talk very well with it.
Oh, yeah, the crunching might interfere.
Yeah,
I was just going to kind of start out like with just kind of making a general statement about witches in cinema. You know, and, you know, I feel like the witch in cinema is such a reflection of society's fears and desires. And so however way we view the witch through the lens of a camera, one thing for sure is that whether she's good, she or he, evil, good, silly, or serious, the witch is always a fascinating character. The witch is the outsider, usually the outcast. And I think that that's why so many people identify with her. And I say, have fun with it. And maybe, we can all be inspired to, hold a witch watch party, you know, have some real fun with it. You know, we can find witches in like a really wide assortment of films, from like B movies, horror flicks, mainstream blockbuster movies, you know, and we see them in art house films, historical fiction, and also in documentaries. And so I would say, you know, some of these films are historically accurate, while others are filled with fantasy, and some of them just tell a good story, you know. So the understanding of witches in cinema are rooted, you know, whether they're fantasy or in reality, like that whole thing is often debated, because I think there's a fine line between it. And of course, you know, we all know that Hollywood very much embellishes, you know, the whole magical aspect of what witches do. You know, I wish that, you know, I snapped my fingers and that, you know, my spell worked just as quickly. You know, once in a while.
Yeah. Or have that wand that you pull out from, you know, your coat or your purse or whatever and run it around.
Yeah, and so, you know, a lot of people just go on movie witches. I mean, that's often what people think that witches are. And so, you know, a lot of times I suppose, you know, there's a mirror, you know, held up between society and what comes up in movies. And a lot of it, I think, really has to do with how we define a witch.
Right.
And tell the story of a witch. And so, you know, and I think that that can be as varied as the, you know, the whole spectrum of humanity. Mm-hmm. You know, each of us as individuals are very different within our beliefs and our experiences. A lot of witches have been, you know, portrayed in fantasy and fairy tale, like The Old Wizard of Oz or Snow White. And some of them, you know, are just enjoyed for their story and usually the layers of meaning found within the story. But then on the more serious side, the way witches are presented by negative stereotypes can really trigger fear and misunderstanding for the most part. So I see most movies seem to explore the character of the witch as either, or sometimes both, as either figures of fear or figures of empowerment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many people do see that correlation and that reflection of the changing views in society is reflected in how the witch is presented. A lot of it has to do with society's views on female power and sexuality. So as we explore the witch, we'll sometimes, you know, in some of the films we discuss, we'll sometimes see them as malevolent forces channeling destructive behavior. And those old stereotypes often see the witch as being in league with the devil. But the witch's archetype is often used to explore female power and rebellion against, you know, the patriarchy or any of the old structures that are exploitive or just aren't, you know, that are oppressive and just aren't holding up anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it really kind of explores a fear link to or surrounding these specific concepts. So my thing is, I believe the witch's archetype is ever evolving along with the cultural context. And the witch of the past, with the traditional stereotypes of the outsider, is also just ever transforming into a more complex and nuanced character, or more as individuals, as more as their humanity is often coming out more than just, you know, as being the boogeyman.
Or boogie woman.
Right. And so, yeah, so what are some of your thoughts on that, Elvira?
Well, it's interesting because all of the, it is, if you, if, as we're going to say and talk about with the movies and how you, it's been worked together for the show, it does show that growth, you know, of from fear and loathing, shall we say, great movie title. can't help take the theater out of the lady here. But it also presents you with different things. And it was interesting when I started doing my research, it began to show distinct periods, as we'll discuss this. But it is about evolving and about changing and coming together. And I guess the thing that I really would like to just say is that it will never, ever, ever be without the you know, the dark, the light, the good, the bad, the good, the evil, because humanity in each individual, we carry all of that. And so we will be, you know, we will be experiencing it, and also we will be carrying it in the world, so that if something happens, I mean, and you get hurt and you then get angry and then you, you know, go to this other like kind of stuff, then what you're going to get is that kind of imagery. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be creating, in this instance, the films, the theater, the things that are out there. But in reality, it's already there working through all of us in what happens in our lives. And then how we evolve in our own life and become more compassionate, more understanding, even with all of the hurt and disappointment and anger that has, you know, come through our lives. And I think the portrayal of the witch is iconic in that. And yet you will always have the back and forth, I think. And that's what I found when I was looking at all these different movies and things. And mm-hmm. I was fascinated by how the things then get revisioned or reconceptualized as we've come more into, you know, the 20th, the 21st century, you know, and the different things. Mm-hmm. And even as we're going to talk about different movies or plays that were made into movies or, you know, any of the sources, how that got revisioned. And I don't mean it in a negative way. It's like you grow. I mean, mm-hmm. we go and we wind up with, you know, I'll get a little graphic here. We'll wind up like a little kid and, you know, we're flat. We don't have a butt. We don't have breasts and, you know, and running around and everything. And then suddenly things start to grow and you start changing and things happen. And mm-hmm. I think that's the way putting it in a very personalized human form is what's happening with the archetype, the type of the witch, and in mm-hmm. its own right, how it and humans that are witches truly mm-hmm. become, you know, this revisioned in situation mm-hmm. to be able to move it in the world. I think that's growth. I mean, if it stayed one thing, it would, you know, be, I hate to use this word, but it would be super rigid and it would be death-like. You would be going nowhere.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've always, being a witch, have always loved the witch archetype. And she has many facets. And so I think that's probably why she is a popular character to be portrayed in movies and in plays and books, because there's so many different ways you can go with her. You know, she can be, you know, evil, or she can be super sweet. She can end up being an anti-hero, which is one of my favorite types of characters. I love, you know, when I love stories where someone who seems to be not a good person in the beginning goes through a series of changes and actually becomes the hero of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've had a lot of fun this week just kind of, you know, kind of re-looking at some of the films that I have watched in the past, and also just kind of looking at some of the commentary. Like, so the film that I'm starting out with is from the 1920s, and it's a silent film, and it's one of the it's very surreal. It's probably one of the edgiest and craziest of all the silent films, and it's called Haxan. It was made in 1922 in Sweden, and so it's H-A with the little two dots on top of that first A, X-A-N, which means the witch. And so, you know, I really believe that, especially if you're a witch, I really believe that everybody should see this film at least once. It's in the Criterion Collection. You can find it free, I think, on YouTube and on Tubi. But it's, yeah, I really do think that everyone should see this one just at least once. It kind of poses as sort of a documentary before it spirals down into the persecution of witches in the Middle Ages. And it actually shows you, like all the different instruments of torture that were used. And it in a very spine-chilling way, it to me, rewatching it recently really just made me get in touch with how dark those times were. And then the craziness of it is that, we see the Middle Ages being portrayed. We see for the 1920s, a lot of nakedness. We see Satan. We see a woman giving birth to an onslaught of monsters, torture, flying witches, possessed nuns, horny monks, and a crazy amount of analingus. And then more torture. And so the whole film is extremely weird, but there is, you will never find anything else like this film. Very unique, and it depicts the most extreme and dark superstitions of the time. Mm-hmm. And what I was more dismayed about was that at the end of it, like the final, 5 or 10 minutes of it, is what they do is they try to equate a lot of the symptoms that women had, which weren't really symptoms. They were actually the results of being tortured and, coming up with these stories of, flying to the, witch's Sabbath and, kissing the devil's butt and doing all this stuff. Is that what they equated to at the end of that is hysteria. And that used to be like a female diagnosis that was used for, it was very much blamed on the woman having a uterus and being too emotional. And so, hysteria was very much a diagnosis back then in the 1920s. Anyway, I just wanted to note that there is also like a 1968 version that Metro Pictures re-edited and re-released under the title Witchcraft Through the Ages. And they have an English language narration by William S. Burroughs.
Oh, my.
It's kind of funny. Yeah. So that, I put that one, because it was such a unique film. And it was, made during the silent film era. And it was before there was a lot of the censoring that ended up going on with Hays in the 1930s. And so, yeah, I don't know. Have you ever seen Haxan?
No, I have not. When you mentioned it, when we were talking at the, before we do our shows and all that, we kind of sit down and chit chat. I didn't see it and I did research it, but no, I haven't. And I'm not sure I'm up for seeing it at this point, even though I'm sure it's very educational.
It's a very unique film. Yeah. And so, and that's, I think the cool thing is that I know that you're going to bring up movies that I haven't seen. So this is going to be fun. So I don't know if you want to jump in or else,
I could jump in and kind of say one of the other things that I noticed is that they either did, like this particular film and portrayals of that, but then they also wound up with, the early fairy tale witches, which, were whimsical characters and, the witches were either ugly, non-threatening or buffoon-like characters and made it in fantasies. And I know that at that point, this gets taken and put off, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And then you wind up with even 1939. Well, 1937 was Snow White, but 1939 was The Wizard of Oz. And of course, in that, we generate the good witch and then the bad witch. Mm-hmm. And that will be something to be talked about later. But it was mm-hmm. interesting because they either looked at it like, as you say, it was funny because I was reading that and I'm going, they did. In the 1920s, mm-hmm. the biggest thing that they could find to define a woman with any kind of sense of empowerment that was moving along is that mm-hmm. she had a uterus, and because of course, we know the hormone thing, which they didn't necessarily know at that time, she went crazy. And, you know, and it was, you know, and that's why they called it hysteria and mental illness and, you know, mm-hmm. the things they did to women in that time frame mm-hmm. to, quote, help them get over it.
Right, yes. Right. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. Equates back to what you were talking about hacks. And even though it was, they're trying to go in a documentary form, even mm-hmm. more in the past, quote unquote, but it was just as brutal and inhumane as, right. you know, what that film Haxan talks about in the more medieval time.
And you're just definitely. Like, I mean, if you think about it, hysteria was treated sometimes like up until the 1950s with either lobotomies or clitoroidectomies, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, those are things that have been documented and are pretty, you know, you can't make this stuff up. It's just like, wow, you know, yeah. That was not that long ago in our history.
I know. And, you know, and then when they got into the electrical process, they do, you know, electrical shock, which of course we know didn't just stay, unfortunately, as obviously, or in the way it didn't stay allocated to a female issue. They just went all out with everything. So,
I wanted to comment on Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, because that,
sure.
You know, along with the Wizard of Oz and 39, I focused on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs because in this animated Disney classic, we see the witch shown as both the hag and rags and as the beautiful but evil queen. Mm-hmm. And in film, she's more likely to be the first witch, or to not be portrayed as she was earlier in the 20s. Most of them were kind of portrayed as like sideshow buffoons, you know?
Yeah.
So in 1937 was actually the first film that portrayed the witch more as a fool, or not as a fool, but as a trickster. Before that, mm-hmm. she was more as a fool. But the witch in Snow White has been referred to as the monstrous feminine.
Yes.
Yes. And the Snow White witch is an amalgam of fairy tale witch and the hag, but she is also something new and much more powerful. And so the 1937 Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, it is like the first time we see the witch presented as a femme fatale. Mm-hmm. And she represents like a transgressive female sexuality and a powerful, independent, and sexy woman, mm-hmm. which is like way different. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was an animation, but.
right.
Yeah.
Well, and then, you know, I know that we need to keep on focus here, but mm-hmm. I know that you were going to bring up something for the 40s, the 1940s.
Oh, yeah. I'll quick talk about 1940s. I chose, you know, I Married a Witch with Veronica Lake and Frederick March. That was in 1942. So this was during World War II, when people were really just wanting to escape into something lighthearted, you know, and escape from the terrors of war at that time. And so I would say the plot for I Married a Witch is in 1672, two witches, Jennifer and her father were burned by the Puritan Jonathan Woolley. And Jennifer cursed all future generations of the Woolley family that the sons will always marry the wrong woman and always be miserable. So then in the, and what they did is they put the witches into the roots of this oak tree. So then in the 20th century, a lightning bolt hits and frees the two witches from the tree that had kept their souls there. And so Jennifer, the main witch, assumes corporeal form and decides to make the up-and-coming politician, Wallace Woolley, then unhappily engaged. She plans to make him even more miserable by getting him to fall in love with her. And so this is just pretty much a fun movie. It's very lighthearted. And it was one of the first movies, I think, showcasing a witch as a beautiful, funny, and romantic character. And so that kind of starts a trend from here. And so, yeah, I could see, I thought that that was a very welcome and sweet change from how the witch was presented before. And I can also see why it took that turn with, you know, the World War II era.
Right. Right. Yeah. And of course, you know, the fact that the witch becomes a romantic heroine, she, you know, there's romance and that kind of a thing. And I know that we need to, I just saw our note. I'm going to let you do this, but I think we need to break.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. So we need to break. We're going to stop here for a little announcement on the side, and we will see you all on the other side. Break us away, Nagashiba.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance that brings you the best in hoodoo, conjure, witchcraft, rootwork, new thought, spiritualism, and pagan ways. Our shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, live on Sundays from 3 to 4:30 Pacific Time. Crystal Silence League Hour, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, and the Now You Know Show. All these shows are available as audio podcasts via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and at YouTube, where we make daily video uploads. Please like and subscribe at youtube.com/LuckyMojoCurioCo. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, makers of handcrafted spiritual supplies and offering the widest selection of magical herbs and roots, plus hundreds of free web pages filled with spellcasting tips and fortune telling techniques. Our shop is located in Forestville, California, and we sell retail and wholesale online at LuckyMojo.com.
Hey, we are back.
Yes.
So we kind of left off with talking about 1942, I Married a Witch, with Veronica Lake and Frederick March. And I wanted to add one little tidbit about it, is that the witches in there are presented like as, before they're corporeal, they're smoke. And it shows them going around, and as they enter into the house where the old house used to be of the people that had, you know, condemned them in the past, they hear people talking, and they, because language changes with each generation, they don't recognize what they're saying. It's like, they're like, is that English? You know, and just trying to figure that out. But one other thing is that Veronica Lake and Frederick March, the two main actors in there, actually hated each other. But it doesn't show in the film. They both did great performances for them. Mm-hmm. I know that she did like a little trick on him where he had to carry her out of the house to save her from a fire. And she like put a bunch of extra weights in her pockets so that she would be like really, really heavy. And wow. So that he would struggle carrying her out. But so I just wanted to kind of shift over to you, Elvira. Any thoughts on that movie or other movie that you're thinking of?
Well, one that everyone has at some point seen is 1950, 58 actually, was Bell, Book, and Candle with Kim Novak and Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm. And of course, the way it was presented was Kim Novak was Gillian Holwright, and she uses love spells to win affections for the upstairs neighbor, which is Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm. And at this point, the portrayal is that the witch is harmless, eccentric, but wants to integrate into society, because when she does, you know, obviously she really does fall in love with him, mm-hmm. she gives up her magic. So it is part of that time frame where women, again, for their love, their desires, they bargained away their power to be able to have, you know, a certain type of life. And so it does kind of show that mm-hmm. as a societal process, as much as, you know, you get into the portrayal of a witch. But it's interesting because from 1960 to 1980 completely goes the other direction. It starts challenging the gender roles. And, you know, there are, you know, different shows, but it was one that I actually did want to say, and then I'll turn it back to you, was mm-hmm. in 1971, there was Bedknobs and Broomsticks, yet again, another Disney film. Mm-hmm. And Angela Lansbury plays Eglantine Price, and she basically is this kind amateurish witch, and she decides that reluctantly she will take three of the children, because of course it's the Blitz time, and they're you know, World War II, and so they're a lot of children were sent out of the area to stay out of London and are homed with other people. And yet she, because of what she is, starts to think she needs to help prevent the invasion of London. So, and she goes to this, again, animated magical animal island to get certain things mm-hmm. and comes back and basically does just that for mm-hmm. a positive outcome, because her work is in the movie stops mm-hmm. the Blitz from happening. So I thought that was an interesting one because I love Angela Lansbury, and I always have in all the different films she's done. But this one I remember seeing because, you know, I was a kid, but I also remember it with my own daughter.
I don't have to watch that one. I never saw it, but that sounds like a fun movie.
It is really funny. I mean, I liked it. It mm-hmm. kind of, again, it's kind of like the Mary Poppins. That's mm-hmm. another one that kind of came in about the same time, 1960s, was Mary Poppins mm-hmm. or, you know, The Sword and the Stone. There were all these ones that Disney did these, even though they tended to mm-hmm. make the stereotypes there, but they did mm-hmm. start mutating, I guess, the versions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, right, yeah. Right. Yeah, there's an interesting mix, I would say, of movies going through the 50s, like the end of the 50s and into the 60s. I know that Bell, Book, and Candle was one of my favorites, although I did not like how it ended.
Yes, neither did I, but then we're modern women, darling, and modern witches.
but I have to say that is one of my favorite vintage witch movies. And I love Jack Lemmon in there too, because he was mm-hmm. also a witch. and that was her brother. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think that's one of the first times they showed a man who was a witch alongside. Right. And so I'm going to kind of reverse, like going from that softer look in the 60s to the 1962 British movie called Burn, Witch, Burn, which was co-written by Richard Matheson, who also wrote like I Am Legend and a number mm-hmm. of other. But Burn, Witch, Burn is also known as Night of the Eagle, and it's also known as Conjure Wife. Right. And it's based on a novel by Fritz Lieber. But this this movie veers away from the magical romantic comedy. It's a college professor discovers that his wife has been practicing magic for years and that she learned it, you know, during the course of her travels. And so this professor insists that it's all BS. And after the wife tells him that her magic is responsible for his well-being and all of the promotions he got, but after that, he makes her get rid of all of her magical tools. And we find out, you know, that another professor's wife is working bad magic against him. And the wife mm-hmm. finds a puppet. And a lot of bad things start to happen to both her and her husband. And so things go badly for a while. And then the husband starts to believe. And in the end, the situation gets reversed. And it ends in a very dramatic way. Mm-hmm. example of probably some reversal magic, but this movie was also noted for its realistic portrayal of campus politics, which I thought was mm-hmm. kind of interesting. And you know, and it does in some ways kind of portray folk magic in a somewhat realistic way, although in a much more dramatic way. Mm-hmm. But something I wanted to say about this film that I thought was so interesting, and I probably watched it on Svengoolie, the mm-hmm. Chicago Post. I probably watched it sometime in the last 6 months on that show. But it's interesting to note that for the American release, and they showed this on Svengoolie, is the film was preceded by a narrated prologue in which the voice of Paul Frees, an actor that's not in the movie, was heard to intone a spell to protect the audience members from evil. For protection, the American theater audiences were given a special pack of salt and words to an ancient incantation. And so, and you know, I'll tell you, for the time, because it was originally a UK release, in the UK, the film was initially rated X.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I know. It's like, yeah, I found that little bit of trivia really interesting.
No kidding. The whole thing
with the guy in the beginning narrating a protection spell and then give, you know, the audience being given packets of salt.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So, well, that was, and so looking at, obviously, from the 70s and then into the 80s, what are the movies that you see in the 80s?
Okay.
1980s.
Okay. In the 1980s, I have to say, I just picked out my favorite one. And that was like a very playful one, which was also based on a book. But it was called The Witches of Eastwick.
Yes.
So that was like 87, and it's about three witches and the devil, played by Cher, Susan Sarandon, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Jack Nicholson. And so, you know, I really enjoyed this film because it's about three women in a small town who have each lost the man in their lives, you know, either by divorce or death, and they're feeling unfulfilled. And they accidentally, because they have this, they get together once a week and have popcorn or snacks and drinks and stuff like that. And they accidentally cast a spell naming what all the things, all the characteristics they would like in a man. And mm-hmm. so shortly after that, Jack Nicholson shows up. And a lot of things happen after that. But so this is like considered a dark fantasy comedy film based on the John Updike novel of the same name. And the witches in this movie are, I like that they're very much more like real people. They stand out symbolically to me in three ways. I would say they're, the way the flow of the movie really does show some feminist empowerment. So out of, you know, the old ideas of independent women being labeled as witches, because that's what ends up happening to them. The other thing that I like is the collective power with them that's shown, because the three of them, the witches' powers are amplified when they're together and they have the same shared desires and bond. And so, you know, I think that, you know, that to me, those are the things that really, really stand out. And so some people might not like it, because they might see it as, it is kind of, it does have some very silly parts to it and stuff, like floating above the pool and stuff like that, or when they're playing tennis, you know, but I think that they, especially the people who were cast in those roles, make it really a lot of fun. And, and Jack Nicholson is an excellent devil.
Definitely. And I know that, you know, when you start looking at the 1980s and 1990s, then you start getting into, I mean, Hocus Pocus 1993, number one. And of course, they are bringing a sequel out. And all of our favorites, I'm sure, 1998 is Practical Magic. Again, they're bringing a sequel out. And what I noticed is that the 1980s to 2000s, their themes seem to be coming of age stories and sisterhood. And I mean, there are other things that are, you know, have another another twist to it. But I noticed that even these, and then one that my granddaughter has, you know, and my daughter in her own right, is Halloween Town, with, you know, Debbie Reynolds playing grandmother. And that's a teenage coming to, you know, 1998, where, you know, coming of age movie.
Wait, can I just say something about Practical Magic?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah. I want that house.
I understand.
The Practical Magic house.
Yes.
And the second thing I just wanted to say is I love how they portray the women in this movie as people.
Yes.
And how in this movie they trust the audience to understand the frightening issue of domestic violence. You know, after all, they do kill the perpetrator twice.
Yes, they do. You know,
and then they end up being haunted by his ghost for the rest of the movie. And so, you know, so there, to me, there's a lot in there about, you know, there's the two sister witches. So it's a lot about sisterhood. You know, there's the aunts, you know, so it's a lot about, you know,
the two aunts. Yes.
Yeah. And so being like connected and stronger because of that.
And you know, the more matrilineal, I mean, they were working on, you know, the sisters coming with the circumstances, and, you know, the fact that there was a curse put on their mother to break up her love affair, and then, you know, this whole thing going through, and but it's about the matrilineal line of female being witches and working it that way, but in a positive way as an outcome. So I, you know, I found that it was fun. It was scary. It was, you know, there was different things, you know, the whole thing, but I really enjoyed that show. And then of course, Hocus Pocus. I mean, Bette Midler, come on. And all the different.
I turn into a kid every time I watch Hocus Pocus.
Truly, you know, and it was, you know, a virgin did that, and it was a virgin boy.
Right, right.
did the deed. But I know there's one that you were going to talk about, and it was 1999. I'm not going to spill the beans, but it was. Do you remember what you were telling me when we talked?
No, I thought that I put. Oh, are you talking about Sleepy Hollow?
That's one of them, but the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, you know, that's on my list, but I decided not to talk about that one.
Okay.
I was going to rewatch it, but the filming actually makes me so dizzy every time I watch it because of handheld cameras and they're running around in the woods. And I would just say that, you know, you don't ever really see a witch in that movie, but it's really all about the fear.
Yes. And I think that's the only reason why it's of importance, at least for us to talk about, is it's that fear that gets created, and it can be created on something that may not even be happening.
Right.
But
exactly.
Named,
exactly.
You know, I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it.
It's contagious too, Ben.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But I was thinking, like, as I just mentioned the Sleepy Hollow one. It's a Johnny Depp movie. And there are a couple of different witches in there. And so that's a fun movie to watch. I would say every October I probably watch that movie. But I'm not going to go too much into it, but it's a fun movie. And would be well worth incorporating into a witch watch party.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Because of that.
Yeah. And so then if we're like moving into the 2000s, I mean, I got to say that, you know, from 2001 to 2011, I think the whole witch thing was very much dominated by all of the Harry Potter films.
Very much so. Very much.
Such a vast universe of characters and witches. And one thing I noticed is that in the books and in the movies is that the females are called witches and the males are called wizards.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite out of those Harry Potter films?
Oh, gosh. you know, I can't tell you all of them. I would watch them literally from one to the other to the other. And it would start out like I'd watch one night one and I'd watch another night. And I'd go to sleep watching these suckers. Okay. So, I think it's because they were diverse roles. I mean, you know, the teacher, you know, Professor Minerva McGonagall and, you know, Hermione Granger were powerful, respected, and, you know, witches. And they, of course, they ranged to the dark side as well. But they were heroes and skilled and fiercely loyal characters that were put into play there.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, from there, you know, you've got... The one that comes down after the 2011 aspects and, you know, Harry Potter series is Maleficent. Again, a Disney,
but
one that basically takes and revisions the traditional evil witch, but explores her backstory.
Yeah.
And, you know, go ahead.
Because I know that we're not going to have too much time, but before you hop into the last one, which I think will probably end up being Wicked, the film, I just wanted to touch on two very unique films that were in the 2010s. Also, like Maleficent, I thought was a wonderful movie. But there was also a couple of standout movies. One was called The Witch in 2015. And then The Love Witch in 2016, which are two very, very entirely different movies. And I'll just give a quick mention of them. is that the witch, which is spelled with two V's in the beginning, is kind of considered like art house folk horror. Mm. But it's also like a, you know, very much a serious historical but dark drama. Mm-hmm. It has themes of spirituality, religion, coming of age, family dynamics, and it is all during the era of Puritan repression. Mm-hmm. And something that I think is interesting is that you noted that we started out with Haxan, mm-hmm. which translates into the witch.
Right.
And we're almost coming full circle now with the witch in 2015. And so I'll just say the plot is based on historical accounts, but I had very mixed feelings about it when I first saw it in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I think the ambiguity about whether the evil presented is real or a product of mass hysteria is very unsettling.
Yes. But that
also might be the point of it, and also the reason that some people love it. Yeah. And so I just want to say that the person who did make that movie grew up in New England and had a lot of folklore and history about that. And he tried to really, and he did do a good job with creating that time period and how fearful people were. One thing that's interesting in The Witch, just some trivia, there's Enochian chanting, which a lot of people might not realize. In the Witch's Coven scene, which, you know, Enochian is an angelic language. And, you know, that comes from 16th century occultist John Dee. And this chant specifically uses the 11th Enochian key, a chant used in rituals to herald the coming of the dead. So, you know, I just wanted to put that out there because there, if you look up some of the production, like what went into the production of that, it kind of gives you like a much more appreciation of that movie, even though I didn't like how they ended up presenting the witch mm-hmm. character.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
Yeah. That's yeah. You know, so I'll just put that there. And then, you know, the only other thing I just want to mention is this real quick is that The Love Witch is a movie about this. Yeah, it's about this witch is categorized as a comedy horror film, and it's an homage to the 1960s. Mm-hmm. So there's, I would say she is very much a femme fatale. Mm-hmm. She actually does these love spells that are too strong, and they end up killing each guy that she tries to get with. But I just want to say that Anna Billard, the writer and director, also studied witchcraft herself, and she decorated the Love Witch's apartment in colors from the Toth, or the Thoth tarot deck.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And so I'm not going to, because we don't have time to really get into more, but the film is very unique in its look and how it was put together. It's just a unique film, so I just wanted to mention it. And I'll just say, at the Buckland Museum of Witchcraft and Magic in Cleveland, they have movie props from the movie The Love Witch.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
That's where hard to make some of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the last one that I thought we would end with is the 2024 movie version of the musical Wicked, which comes through a series of four books that this gentleman that was the author, not the original from The Wizard of Oz, Baum, wrote, because what it does is it takes the portrayal of Afaba, the supposed Wicked Witch of the West, and provides a nuanced and more positive representation with challenging the binary notion of good and evil by reconceptualizing what is her version, but her multifaceted and more empathic aspects of her being marginalized, misunderstood, basically at the very beginning when, you know, she comes out as a green baby and everybody gets freaked out. Mm-hmm. And it presents her as, you know, a force of justice, where she uses her magical abilities to fight for justice and challenge corruption, and especially opposing the taking away of the voice of the talking animals of Oz, and then takes it going with empathic and compassion, that despite, you know, her you know, her state of what she looks like and her being green and, you know, all these things, she possesses a very strong moral compass and fierce loyalty. And that's where it starts creating this dynamic of her backstory. And she becomes a victim of societal injustice because she's different. She's, you know, strange and all that. Mm-hmm. And then it takes and makes her a more complex female protagonist and reshapes the stereotype. And I did watch it, and I was crying when you saw them try to take the voice away from the different animals that were teachers in this magical university. And then at the very end, it's a series. I mean, they're going to do a second film. This is just the beginning, it was where they left her. And even the, you know, Glinda, the good witch of the, you know, whatever, they don't give her a direction. They just give her the fact she's the good witch, is she knows who she is, and she will side with the wizard because she wants her power, but she also loves this woman as a sister and knows that she must follow her path. And it takes the witch concept and works it into a completely different aspect of where you are and who you are and what you choose and how you choose it. And it was amazing. I don't know. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. And I actually have it on my watch list, so I intend to see it, but I have not gotten around to seeing it yet. So I'm glad you were able to cover that one, because it's huge, and it has another one coming out.
Right, it does. And you know, I know we need to get moving a little bit here, but it is something that is awesome. I think it more so now than ever. But I do have one thing, and then I'm going to turn it over to what you need to do. Is it was a quote I found that someone sent me, and it says, "Individually, we are a drop. Together, we are an ocean." And it's by Ryuno Suko Satora. And I thought that was both profound for witches, but for all of us.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. What a great way to end it. So I hope that everybody got a little inspired by our discussion today, and, you know, hopefully form your own witch watch party. And just enjoy it. Have fun with it. So you can join the Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron next time for discussing witches in pop culture, which should be a lot of fun. So I'm going to kind of go on to our contact info for readings or root work. You can find both Elvira and I on Hoodoo Psychics, and also at AIR, the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. Elvira can also be found for readings at two other places, and that's at www.milk-and-honey.com. And the second place you can find her is www.elvira.com. And then you can also find me, Deborah Voith, for tarot readings, evidential mediumship, mentoring, spell casting, and other stuff at my website at Bewitching Bee Magical Supply, or www.bewitchingbee.com. Or you can also DM me on Facebook. So so now it is time for us to say farewell.
Yes, this was an absolutely superb and fun show. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so goodbye, everyone. Until next time, which on, which well, and which wisely.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs on Thursdays and is available for download. Plus, we're uploading them weekly as YouTube videos. Questions or comments on this show, or ideas for upcoming shows, can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.